A proposal to use hundreds of millions of dollars from the state's budget surplus to fund upgrades to the Milwaukee Brewers Stadium may be dead. That's after a top Republican said his caucus will not support it. We've made it to Friday. It's March 10th, and this is Wisconsin Today. Good morning. I'm Alex Crow. Coming up, Foxconn wants to build a giant solar energy project in Mount Pleasant, and La Crosse is ending its experiment with year-round school at one of its schools. Stay with us.
You tune into Wisconsin Public Radio for news you can trust, conversations that draw you in, and music and entertainment that make your day better. The largest source of funding for everything you value on WPR is listener support. Join the team that makes WPR possible. Become a sustaining member. Make an ongoing monthly gift and share WPR with your entire community. It's easy to sign up at WPR.org.
More than 77,000 Wisconsinites lost power Thursday night into Friday morning as a powerful winter storm moved across the state. The majority of outages were located in southeastern Wisconsin, where some communities saw several inches of snow. We Energies tweeted out around midnight that they were seeing outages due to the storm. They urged people to avoid downed power lines and report them to local law enforcement and their company. As of Friday morning, the We Energies outage map showed more than 77,000 Wisconsinites were still without power. Wisconsin's top Republican is shooting down a plan from Governor Tony Evers to fund improvements for the Milwaukee Brewers Stadium. Evan Casey has more about the proposal.
Evers proposed a $290 million plan using budget surplus funds for upgrades to the stadium. Part of the deal says the team must sign a new lease to stay in the city longer, but Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said yesterday that Republicans won't support that plan. Some economists don't believe public financing of stadiums is a good idea. That includes Dr. Victor Matheson, an economics professor at the College of the Holy Cross.
Investment in sports facilities is a poor use of public money. There aren't large economic benefits associated with it, not much in the way of spillovers into the general community.
A spokesperson for the governor said they're still hopeful they'll be able to strike a bipartisan deal. Evan Casey, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Small farmers and meat processors are calling for more state support to address a lack of skilled workers and inspectors. The shortage is creating delays and challenges with processing animals. Carly Stevenson and her husband, Tyler, co-own Will-O-The-Winds Farm in Washburn. She says it's been a struggle to schedule their pigs for slaughter.
Now I actually have to call way before my piglets are even born. And so I'm calling 9 months out to create butcher appointments.
Stevenson has been taking her pigs roughly 2 hours away by vehicle to Lake Haven Meats in Sturgeon Lake, Minnesota. Wisconsin meat processors say the industry is struggling with a lack of skilled workers. Governor Tony Evers' budget proposes more than $1 million to extend a grant program which offers tuition assistance for students pursuing a career in meat processing. He's also reviving a proposal to provide $1 million in grants each year to help processors expand. Roughly 1.6 million Wisconsinites will soon need to apply to renew their Medicaid enrollment or risk losing health coverage. As Sarah Lear explains, the change comes after Congress rolled back pandemic-era protections.
In exchange for extra health funding during the public health emergency, Congress passed a law that prevented states from kicking people out of Medicaid programs. That meant those already enrolled as of mid-March 2020 could stay enrolled without needing to renew. But that will soon change after federal lawmakers voted to phase out the continuous coverage requirement. Now, state health officials are warning Wisconsin residents using Badger Care Plus or other Medicaid programs to update information in their online access portals. Jamie Kuhn is Wisconsin's Medicaid director.
Update your contact information if you need to. Watch and read your mail.
Kuhn says that we'll make sure officials can reach residents about deadlines that will come up between June of this year and May of next year. Sarah Lear, Wisconsin Public Radio.
The school district of La Crosse has decided to end the year-round calendar at one of its elementary schools after nearly a decade. Officials hoped the schedule at Hamilton Elementary would prevent loss of learning over the summer and improve student behavior and enrollment, But La Crosse District Administrator Aaron Engel says the calendar has not had a significant improvement on test scores. 68% of families in the school boundary are choosing not to attend Hamilton. Engel says a survey of families showed more than half cited the calendar as their reason for opting out.
The year-round model was intended to serve the students in that neighborhood. And so over time, it seems that the model kind of slowly started to not serve those needs.
But some parents are upset by the sudden change to the long-running program. They say the year-round calendar breaks up the monotony of a traditional school year, and it also reduces the burden of finding summer childcare. A roughly 2,000-panel solar project could be coming to Foxconn's property in Mount Pleasant. Joe Schultz has more on the partnership between the company and We Energies.
The company's plan to seek approval from Mount Pleasant and Racine County for the solar project. The development could generate enough energy to offset over 1,000 metric tons of CO2 emissions each year. That's equivalent to taking 260 cars off the road or planting 20,000 trees. Brendan Conway is a spokesperson for We Energies.
Projects like this make a big difference in reducing emissions, which is part of our commitment to affordable, reliable, and clean energy.
Conway could not disclose the project cost, but he said it will not impact customer rates. We Energies will pay for the installation and maintenance of the solar panels, and Foxconn plans to buy the energy generated by the system. Joe Schultz, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up after the break, we'll hear a story from Wisconsin Life about the history of socialism in Wisconsin, especially in Milwaukee. We'll be right back.
You know you can count on WPR for news that's important, music that makes your day better, and conversations that make you think. We hope you'll make a financial contribution to support the radio service you rely on, and in fact, we count on it. The single largest portion of our budget comes from listener support. If you're not a member yet, make a gift of any amount today at WPR.org. Thank you.
And finally, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg exploring the history of socialism in the Upper Midwest.
Wisconsin has a rich history in politics that has influenced many of the nation's major political movements. Here's contributor Eric Dregney with a look at Wisconsin's connection to socialism.
I grew up hearing how dangerous socialists were. After all, the Cold War against the USSR could turn hot if we didn't root out the communists in our midst, as Joe McCarthy warned. Then, I lived in a socialist Norway, and my wife gave birth to our first baby there. Norwegian healthcare covered the birth and gave us $5,000 to help raise the baby, and would deposit $150 into our bank account every month until our son was 18. This democratic socialist government paid for my year of college in Trondheim, paid our health care, and would pay our pension if we had stayed. These socialists certainly didn't seem so dicey after all. They seemed positively civil. Some American politicians invoke Scandinavian socialism as a model for the U.S., but I suggest we look to Wisconsin. Our state has a long history of alternatives to for-profit corporations in the form of owner-operated cooperatives and profit-sharing credit unions. Milwaukee even elected three socialist mayors. German visionaries in Milwaukee dreamed of a cooperative commonwealth rather than cutthroat capitalism and succeeded in electing socialist mayors that served most of the period between 1910 and 1960. Milwaukee's socialist mayor, Emil Seidel, even lured Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Carl Sandburg to work for him. Wisconsin may have had its share of socialist mayors, but the most influential progressive was likely Thorstein Veblen, born in Cato, Wisconsin, as the son of Norwegian immigrants. He viciously criticized cutthroat American capitalism with his famous warnings of conspicuous consumption. And his book, The Theory of the Leisure Class, became the impetus for the Roosevelt Revitalization Package for the U.S., better known as the socialist-leaning New Deal. Baptist minister Lars Jorgensen Hauge witnessed a poor Danish-American woman break down in tears after she was given just 5 cents a pound for her sweet cream butter, and then only in trade at the company store. Hauge remembered the cooperative creameries back in Denmark. So he traveled the Midwest preaching his butter sermons, pushing the farmers to share their wealth with each other by forming cooperatives. The cooperative ideal spread throughout the Midwest and expanded to general stores, food markets, gas and electrical operations, agricultural elevators, and banks as credit unions. These co-ops offer an alternative system that allows all members to have a stake in the greater good rather than working just for the wealthy. Even Midwestern houses, cozy bungalows, came from the populist arts and crafts movement that took its socialist views and applied them to handcrafted houses that were affordable to everyone. Danish landscape architect Jens Jensen brought his progressive ideals to Wisconsin. He died in Ellison Bay when he worked with Frank Lloyd Wright. Gustav Stickley from Osceola, Wisconsin, expanded on the style with his Craftsman magazine that promoted arts and crafts design and socialist equality. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel wrote in 2010 that the socialists delivered and the public came to expect administrations rooted in honesty, efficiency, frugality, and concern for the working person. They called their fellow citizens to a higher conception of the common good, one that placed cooperation above bare self-interest. This socialist legacy survives here in the upper Midwest with by far the most co-ops of any other area of the country. Apparently, the democratic socialism that we experienced in Norway was here all along.
Eric Dregney teaches English at Concordia University in St. Paul. He's the author of several books, including Vikings in the Attic, In Search of Nordic America. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
And that'll do it. Thanks for joining us for Wisconsin Today. I'm your host, Alex Crow. Our producers are John Davis and Rob Metzer. You can catch us wherever you get your podcasts every weekday morning, and you can always find more news anytime at WPR.org. Have a great day and weekend. We'll talk to you again on Monday.